You want to say a quick prayer?
I don't even know. What do you say in times like this?
Let everyone get what they deserve, even once. Amen.
Amen.
In the first aeon, I was the great spirit. In the second aeon, men knew me as the horned god, Pangenitor, Panphage. In the third aeon, I was the dark one, the devil. In the fourth aeon, men knew me not, for I am the hidden one. In the fifth aeon, I appear before you as Baphomet, the god before all gods who shall endure to the end of the earth. In this new aeon, I appear to you as C.M.N.
Imagine that there is a brilliant white light just above.
Is commentary on the magic art.
In the year of the primal force, in the dawn of terrestrial birth.
Oh, that was very educational.
Now magic will take place. Don't be fooled by what I just said.
Welcome, welcome everyone. I am Starman waiting in the sky, Kennedy, and this is Chaos Magic News, the objectively best occult podcast on the net. Joining me, as always, is my co-host, the chief occult writer for the Reagan-era CIA, S. Jason Crack. Mr. Crack, how you doing? You don't have to say it's okay. We know how you're doing.
They just bombed Iran.
Yeah, yeah, we'll get to that.
Sorry.
No, it's... For those of you wondering what's going to come up in the news segment later, boy, do we have some stuff to say about that.
We were literally sitting down to record this, and then it's like, oh.
Three successful strikes completed. Anyway, but before that, we're going to talk a little bit about transgression in magic to lead into what will be our culture piece for the week, the Black Mass. Ooh, spooky Black Mass. It feels so trite sometimes, you know?
We bombed Iran just now.
Yeah, we do a show where we get to make jokes about, you know, the spooky Black Mass. And then we also have to talk about how we've attacked Iran. Just blowing up nuclear. This is...
Yeah.
We are the contradiction that exists in capitalism, I think.
Yeah.
Are you okay, though? How you holding up?
Yeah, it's one of those where, like, it... Ultimately, I'm an internal optimist. Even when everything is going wrong, there's that part of me that thinks, like, you know, we don't know where things are gonna go. So, you know, I'm not freaking out. I'm not panicking. There's very little I can do, or pretty much anybody listening to this, there's very little that you probably can do. You know, we just, like I said, just keep trying to be there for each other.
You want to tell the horse story?
Yeah, I can tell the horse story. Fuck it. So there's a man in a village, right? And one of his horses gets out. And all of his neighbors go, oh man, what rotten luck. And he goes, maybe. Next day, the horse comes back and it's bringing two more horses with him. And they're like, oh man, that's how fortunate, how what a blessing that was. And he goes, maybe. And the day after that, one of his sons is trying to break in one of the new horses. It throws him off his back. His son breaks his leg, and they're all like, oh man, what a tragedy, how unfortunate. And he goes, maybe. And then the next day, a war that's broken out to the south, the army comes in and conscripts all the young men except for the young man with the broken leg, and they're like, oh man, what a blessing that was. And then he goes, maybe. We don't have the scope to know good news from bad news, to know what is going to lead to what. All right, we said enough on that?
Yeah. You want to talk about something fun?
Yeah. Our opening discussion was going to talk about the ideas of transgression in magic. Particularly chaos magic has a real proclivity, I guess, for this, in the idea of deprogramming, of trying to break conditioning, particularly cultural or personal taboos. There's a notion of a large freeing of energy, whether like psychological or emotional, or maybe like energy in like some kind of weird mana, spooky regard for the term. But the idea of of transgressing, whether against a personally held idea, such as like, I don't know, say you're a vegetarian and then you eat meat, and like a conscious decision of I'm breaking all of these ideas that I have, these things that I hold dear to me or things that I hold as part of my identity, I'm going to make a conscious decision to break them. You see that happen in Eastern traditions and the Tantra. There's the five M's, right? It's the five M's.
Yeah, the five M's that are, you know, only M's in if Sanskrit, where they're not really M's. Yeah, so meat, alcohol, fish. God, what is it? I'm missing one, because the last one is parched grain, but it's also sex, depending on it is. Yeah. What's the fifth one? Meat, fish, alcohol, parched grain.
A bicycle.
God, I can't remember it off the top of my head. What is it? Hang on, I'm gonna figure this out.
We just bombed Iran.
It's wine, meat, fish, grain, and no, I was mistaking it. It's wine, meat, fish, grain, and sexual intercourse.
Oh, so you get like your bread and you get to have sex with a lady. That's dope. Actually, I think the West, like, you can do that, where it's like you just have a garlic bread and premarital sex, and your Baptist grandma is just so disappointed in you. But no, there is a real potency to that sort of thing, in the same way that perhaps confronting like a long held fear or an apprehension that you've had might do a lot. Or when you finally break down and you tell your partner, your whoever, and where it's like, listen, I really just want you to put on the fucking clown nose, you know? And it feels like it's such a big, and it's something that you were so afraid of, and you were like, oh my God, they're going to think I'm a freak. And then you finally do it, and it's like, it's out in the open. Honk, honk. Hong Kong.
Yeah. What do you think it is about the transgression of specifically like social norms, I think, that is so powerful? Is it because we're all just walking around as like Freudian neurotics? Like we're all just kind of like, even though we're all well-adjusted to a lot of aspects of society, we're all secretly like, I just want to fuck. I just want to do all the things that I'm not supposed to do.
I think it has more to do with the notion of, and sorry, like you know, everyone's going to hate this, or maybe someone, but it's chaos. It is the idea of injecting instability into what you are dealing with, where we are all caught up in routines. That routines are how we understand our norms and what's going on. But for us to make new connections in a very tangible sense, you know, what's the cliche? If you want something new to happen, you have to do something you haven't done before. It's like that, in the same way that, for example, psychedelics might offer a novel experiences, because they create a very strong disruption in your normal processes, whether you want it to or not, you know?
Yeah, I was thinking about the cut loose, get drunk mentality.
Yeah, that's another good one. It's because it destroys your inhibitions. And you feel the rain on your skin. No.
I thought it was release your inhibitions, but
maybe that's it.
Good joke. I tried to get there. Yeah, you tried. You're certainly trying. Anyway, no, but I was actually thinking specifically, like, you ever just start drinking at a time that you're not supposed to drink?
I've mentioned this. I don't know if I've mentioned it on the show. I've definitely talked to people in the Discord and stuff about it. People, there is something very interesting when you say you're on vacation, like the holidays are really good for this. If you're blessed enough that you get a couple days around the holidays where like you're not going to work, but you're also like, you're not really doing anything. Like you're waiting around for people to show up for Thanksgiving dinner or coming around for Christmas or something like that, you know? So you're at home. For the most part, you might be doing stuff, but you're not going out or anything like that. There's something really nice for me about where my day normally starts with a cup of black coffee. And then during times like this, it starts with a cup of black coffee with a bunch of whiskey in it.
Yeah.
And there's something about hitting the road or There's something about
sorry, what you're driving? No.
Yeah, I get on my tricycle and I say it's one of the five M's.
It's wine, fish, bread, tricycle.
Yeah.
Parched grain.
My grains are parched as I take another slug of the whiskey. But no, there's something very nice about that feeling of like hitting the ground running, of like, this is your day, all right? Let's go. Look, look, look. And you know, on one level, it's like you're an alcoholic. That's what most people would say. And there's almost a level of there's almost the transgression in that as well.
Well, I was going to say what I think is important about it and important about the use of transgression in a magical context is that it is, in fact, injecting a little chaos into something, but it's injecting chaos into something. It's still holding it in like a measured and useful way, right?
The interview I just did with Mariana is a great example when we're talking about the shocks and anchors sort of thing. The idea of, and just using the metaphor of the eight circuits, but the idea that like there are these experiences that can be shocks that really disrupt. They bring in chaos, but in the chaos, they allow us to make new connections and experience new things. But the problem is that it's finding the right grounding for all of this, where it's like you can get something really powerful hit you and it can shake you up and completely like it can make you lose your mind. It's too much. And things that just a little tickle. Sometimes the transgression, like example is put a brick through your TV. I can't remember where I got that from.
I thought that was, it's either Thompson or Burroughs, one or the other.
Definitely. But it's like the put the brick through your TV thing. And it's like, that's a really good one if you're the type of person that can commit. But there is a certain level of like, the minute you do that, the first thought you're going to have is, yeah. Your second thought is going to be, why the hell did I do that? It's almost like if you're ever driving and you have that sudden intrusive thought to like, what if I just wreck my shit right now? You know,
even more violently, the person tailgating you too hard and you're like, I could just brake check you right now.
Brake check
and ruin both of our days.
Yeah. And there's that thing of like, there is a weird, there's the giving in. And that might be a little bit of what you're talking about. And the idea of we're all sort of neurotic. So like, we just want to do what we want to do like on impulse and nuts to all of this convention and all this bullshit. But we also, in a certain way, we're all kind of children, you know, when you're a little kid and you're doing something bad and it's so great because you're getting away with it. And the minute you get caught, it all comes tumbling down.
Yeah, it was the best thing in the world. And now the minute you've gotten caught, you're like, why did I do this? It was never, never really going to be worth it.
Exactly. So there is that finding the line.
Right. But being an adult now, finding that line is a lot easier because you can find yourself living in a shotgun shack, or you can find yourself in another part of the world, and you can find yourself behind the wheel of a large automobile. And I mean, but seriously, you can put yourself in settings, again, not in using the examples we're using. Don't put yourself behind the automobile. The tricycle's probably fine, but not an automobile. But you can put yourself in these situations, in these settings where you're allowed to do exactly what you're talking about, where you're allowed to give in to the thing. I mean, hey, maybe because it's on my brain because of other things we'll announce later at the end of the show. But kink is like that for the most part. In the classic Lacanian idea of being a pervert, where you want the big other to come in and tell you, well, this is how it is, and that's just how it's going to be. And that's, you know, the secret behind a lot of fetishism that, I mean, I'm sure everyone knows this, is sort of like the submissive is the one with the real power, right? Like that sort of idea. When you put yourself in a situation where you're allowed to like give in to these weirder, wilder impulses that you so adequately put it, where we're all, you know, we're all too adult. We're all too grown up to let ourselves be taken in by these sorts of things, but you can put yourself in a setting where that's perfectly all right. And that's again what I think the usefulness of it in a magical context is. Whether you view that in the sense of like, you know, the Austin Osmond Spare or Maslow, like peak experience sort of thing, where you know you can use something like the feeling, the good psychological state feelings we get out of like doing things that we're not supposed to do, or whether you view it in a more, I don't know, energy model type idea where the psychic energy generated by breaking social taboos is going to power something.
There's a mid-step between these where it's the notion of like the energies freed up in the bioelectric system that is the human body, right? It liberates energy that is normally being occupied in this sort of rigid character armoring state, and you can crack it open by doing bad things. It's fun to do bad things. I wanted to go do hood rat stuff with my friends.
Just because it's on my brain too. I was listening to Robert Brandom talk about Hegel and shit, but he was talking about he was using it in that kind of like pragmatist social norm sense that people love from us. Oh, it's your favorite thing, isn't it, guys? But he put forth the idea that alienation is the way in which we all understand that we're beholden to social norms that are like groundless and contingent and historical and not like, you know, directly engaged with the things we're doing and the standards we hold, that sort of thing. I guess, you know, if you want to go more something that might be more familiar to us, is it's the sort of the way that God used to be something that was just an accepted part of the world and then went away. So now your life is like completely ungrounded in a way that earlier histories didn't have. Am I making sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, absolutely. Think about, and yeah. So in, think about that in terms of transgression, like transgression as like freeing yourself from the alienation that we experience in the world. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. And then almost in a way, it is that striving for catharsis too. There's like,
oh yeah, yeah.
Well, here's an example, right? When's the last time that you cried? Because for
June 7th, 1997.
Never mind.
My father said he was proud of me, and then after one tear fell, he took it back. So never again. Never again.
No, that's a good example. This is fine. This is a perfect example then. But it's like with a lot of men, right?
You know, uh-huh.
we're men.
We don't cry. Yeah. We rub some salt in it and we die.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Don't never show emotions. Die of a heart attack in your 40s. Be a man. Yeah. So the idea of having a breakdown where you just like, I don't know, I'm talking like a couple tears. And it's like imagine just bawling like a fucking baby for like till you basically exhaust yourself.
Oh yeah.
You know?
No.
That's almost because there is a physical and emotional release there, but there's also a very transgressive taboo that a lot of men are breaking if they were to do something like that. In the same way that like it doesn't hit the same way of like a man sitting there and destroying his own apartment or something like that. Like you just sit there, put a brick through your TV, put holes in the wall. It's like it hits on us like in one level, that's a different type of transgression because it's like, oh, you're not supposed to. But in a weird way, that feels more in tune with like what your society and what your kind of your culture has taught you.
It's, oh, yeah.
Like it's in a weird way, it's almost more acceptable to destroy everything you own than it would be to like have an embarrassing cry fest.
Yeah, it's far more acceptable for someone to tell you at a restaurant that they're leaving you and you like flip the table than it would be for you to like curl up in a ball and like real snot nose, like
snotty nose,
holding yourself back cry. Like people would understand if you like cried a little bit and, you know, and even to a sense like there, you know, there's a little ingrained masculine tendencies that I think a lot of people would be like, come on, don't do that here. Like I get it. You probably need to cry, but like, go do that somewhere else. You're a man. Like that it sort makes, of stuff too.
It makes not just men either, but women that it's like, I saw this man cry and now I got the ick, you know, that's
right. Or, you know, or like, again, even, you know, even people that when you ask them about this sort of thing, they'll be very,
but that's
you know, they'll be very supportive, but then you get them in the situation.
The invasiveness of cultures. And that's why we're talking about like breaking these can be very powerful because you might on one hand know it's like, yeah, of course I'm a liberated intellectual. I know that I can cry. And then like you're doing it and like something, there's something very different in that experience.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? I think I got it. Because this is the ideal space to do some magical work using transgression of social norms that is not That's not like just like, oh, take a bunch of drugs where you're not supposed to, or, you know, stop.
Pee your pants.
Well, okay, close.
Oh,
movie theater.
Movie theater.
Movie theater.
Yeah. Okay, go on.
You go to the movies. You buy whatever is the wrong movie for you to see. You know what I mean? Like the new Paw Patrol movie out, and you're like a 40-year-old guy with no kids. You go to the Paw Patrol movie. You're anything else? You go see. You go see Madam Web. I don't know.
You are dressed like you're dressed like you're going to the Barbie movie, where you've got like your matching pink pumps and everything else, and then you say, "One for Die Hard, please." You know.
Yeah, yeah. You do the thing.
Playing against whatever, like everyone's, if the idea of everyone's a type.
Yeah.
Play against your type.
Play against your type. Play against the perception of your type and play against your actual type. I don't just mean go see a movie that you want to see that you'd feel a little embarrassed about seeing. I'm talking about go see something that you don't want to see and go see something that people are going to be confused that you're there for. And make sure you go to the ones where you can buy alcohol, because, you know, I'm lying. You're going to do a little drug in here because you're not supposed to. You definitely shouldn't be drinking a wine cooler at the Paw Patrol movie is what I'm saying here. Like, that's going to add to this. You get your popcorn, you get your food, and then you go into the theater and you do just everything wrong. I mean, everything. You know, you can't talk, you're not supposed to talk to the movie, be talking on the phone, live stream it to your fans on Twitch, you know, be throwing popcorn, you know, just get all of this stuff until you get thrown out. Cause getting thrown out of a building, if you've never been thrown out before, is like peak transgressive experience, because it's one of the only times that you get to avoid exactly what co-host was talking about, that childlike feeling of embarrassment, or like, oh, this wasn't worth it. Of getting thrown out of somewhere. Make sure you get thrown out for nothing that's illegal. Just get thrown out for being a bad patron. Because then you get to feel justified as if, because I've paid the money, I have done the thing.
And tell them, like, I'm never coming back here ever. I demand. If you try to get thrown out in the first half of the movie and then say, I haven't even seen half of the movie yet. Give me back my money.
Yeah.
Absolute shit to everyone around you. There's ways that are more like in a practical, like ceremonial magic kind of setting.
Oh,
there's
of course.
Things like, you know, even the act of performing rituals naked starts out of that sort of transgression.
Right. Or at least an attempt to like get over something that is still viewed as somewhat transgressive at this point. Yeah.
But also confronting your own personal taboos of things that you don't think about yourself. If the notion is understanding the groundlessness of your being. Which is, that's a big thing in chaos magic, understanding the contingent aspects of everything that you do.
Yeah, the colonial being, as Carol puts it too, this way that we are not a singular, we are like a plurality of differing desires and drives and possible interpretations.
And potentialities too.
Right, potentialities and most important.
So like I said, the vegan that now that intentionally eats a hamburger, or you know, the teetotaler that has a single drink or something like that. It's not, a lot of them aren't quite so easy, I don't think, because like sometimes it's shit that you probably just like, it ain't worth it. Like, you know, cheating on your girl as a magical act is probably not the fucking move.
Well, I mean,
it's a big, don't get me wrong. It's a big transgression, but it's sort of like I said, like the, I could wreck my car sort of thing. It's like,
right,
you can.
Yeah, you can.
It's a gut. Is it worth it?
You better do it for something real big, I guess, if you're going to do it, is what I'm going to say. Not that I recommend you cheat on your spouse or wreck your car. Cheat on your car and wreck your spouse. How about that? That's like a mug for your dad on Father's Day.
Absolutely. But I think that's kind of the rub, though, is that it's like it's difficult in the idea of the really powerful transgressions are things that you have to consider carefully, because they can have very lasting consequences. But there are probably sillier ones. Like, if you want to really alter your headspace, go home from work, keep all of your clothes on, jump in a cold shower.
Oh,
wet sock, wet, like wet Nikes in the tub. It's going to do some things to you that like, you might not like them, but it'll definitely wake you up to certain things that you probably hadn't thought of. Don Juan, Carlos Castaneda, has a concept of not doing, where one of the examples that was given, not by them, but by, I think Victor Sanchez, talking about it later, is like, put the dishes in the back seat of your car and take them for a ride around the block before you do them.
You know, stuff like, sometimes there's just the idea of a, it's not so much a transgression in the idea of like a of a, an act of almost malicious or act of like, of breaking convention, but sometimes just an act of a transgressive absurdity.
Oh yeah.
These might be better if these are something that like you can get someone to watch. You know, and that's don't cheat on your wife, but confuse the hell out of her because you're now, because you tell her it's like, no, you don't understand. I have to reverse all the doorknobs in the house.
Tell her it's the annual knob rotation for the house.
Baby, and you don't get, no. Listen,
you
honey,
don't understand. Honey, we're going to lose our home insurance if I don't do this. This is important.
You see, they wear out on one side, so you got to flip them. It's almost like rotating your tires, baby.
Oddly enough, the big ones are stuff that I feel reach into the two categories, you know, of stuff that is so crazy that it has no practical value, or stuff that is like so radically life altering by doing it that it's probably not on the table. You know, back to the Memphis Rap Sigil stuff, you know, killing somebody to sell a mixtape that's going to sell 49 copies. You know, like realistically, as a magician, if you're the kind of person that's going to go kill somebody, you're nuts. Like, it's over. Sorry. But. And you know,
hardline stance.
I mean,
don't kill people for rap fame.
Yeah, but like, you know, the point being that, like, you know, killing somebody, yeah, obviously transgressive. Like, you know, violent crime, obviously transgressive. It's like these things for most of us don't have a whole lot of practical value. Like, yeah, it's transgressive. It's also gonna fuck my whole life up in ways that my stupid magic spell is not gonna fix. And then, you know, the ones that are like too life altering, like, you know, even. You know, you could go out and drag, right? You know, that's going to not fuck your life up ultimately. You might get some weird questions later about it from people at work and stuff, depending on how big of a place you're
in. Hey, that's a good example, though. The what is it, Rumi, who it's like talking about, like, destroy your reputation, become infamous, then you'll be free. That's kind of what this is talking about.
No, it's exactly what it is.
That's why we do this show.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That way no one's ever going to take us seriously, so I don't have to worry about anything you say about me, because I get to pull a Jon Stewart on you. I'm just a comedy man. No, but but back to end on it, I think part of it is really important to remember that those really big ones, you know, which they stick out to us, they're big, they're important, but there's also tons of really smaller ones that go unchallenged all the time, and you'd be amazed at how breaking them can bring about a lot of weird things. Just go to a restaurant, order baked potato, eat it with your hands. You'll feel like the most powerful person in the fucking room, a hand of God. People will be uncomfortable, but there's nothing they can do because there's no reason to not eat a baked potato with your hands. Like, I mean, I guess it's kind of greasy maybe, but like, you know what I mean though?
Yeah.
But it'll make people uncomfortable. Or, stand too close to somebody in an elevator. Not in like a creepy, threatening way. Like, just a little too close. Like, they'll back away. And when they do, like, lean in a little bit. You can chase them around the fucking elevator. No, don't do this for real. No.
But you know, there's lots of stuff, you know, maintaining awkward eye contact, or there was one that came from Robert Anton Wilson. Like, this wasn't an exercise, this is just something he mentioned, where he's talking about sort of all of these unnoticed or unacknowledged rules that we all exist in. He's like, you know, there was an experiment they did where they told these college students to go home to their parents. And then instead of like treating them like they're, just treat them like you're like roommates, basically. Not as like, not, don't be mean or rude, but like, you know, don't treat them like they're your parents. Treat them like they're just sort of people you're living with. And you'll be amazed. They'll think like your parents will think you're nuts, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Because you're violating all like, and so now we're getting into the weird transgressions of like weird social norms we don't even codify. Or codify, or commodify, or komodo-fi.
Yeah, komodo dragons. Yeah.
Yeah.
In the sense of like breaking yourself of these like stationary, static sort of mental states, or however you want to phrase this, you know, these conventions that you're stuck in constantly, breaking lots of little small ones that you just don't, notice most of the time, I think can have a very profound effect.
And I think to put a bow on this of why is this useful as magical act? Why is this useful in terms of thinking about your magical practice? In the same way that like we talk about injecting chaos in the idea of novel connections and novel modes of being and ways of looking at things can be found in these situations. I think the act of breaking one sort of norm in one field of your life will have profound effects on other fields of your life. It's not just, oh, I was afraid of public speaking, so instead I got up in front of a crowd that did not want me to talk and I went on a tirade like a crazy person. It's not just, oh, well, that deals with my engagement with other people. I believe, it, at least in my experience and sort of the way that this is talked about, these are the ideas that this energy that is freed up can have expansive implications, because it's the idea of breaking these up so that you're you as a totality, you know, as a whole psychocosm or a whole nervous system or a whole pattern of behaviors, by destroying one support or destroying one piece, it causes a shift everywhere.
Yeah, I'm with that. I think the small changes in our lives can have profound effects just on the way we deal with the rest of the world, you know? Practices, skills, everybody take a drink. Moving on. Now it's time for everyone's favorite segment,
where we roll up our sleeves, we hold our fucking nose, we take a good look at the news, and we ask ourselves, we bond Ira.
Jesus Christ. We bombed Iran, people.
We bombed Iran, indeed. I don't have anything to say about it at this point, actually. Can we set it on the front end? It like literally just happened. It doesn't necessarily mean that World War III is going to break out, but it's very dicey territory. The only thing I can say, I just said it to the Discord, it's like it just gives you this feeling of like inevitability of stuff, where it's like it really didn't matter who was president, because like Kamala Harris was definitely would have done this shit. And it's sort of thing of like, what kind of fucking deep state George W. Bush bullshit was going on that it was like, man, thank God we finally get to bomb Iran. We've been begging for this. Please just let us bomb Iran. It's all we want. It's all we want. I it's one of those where it's like, if it wasn't for this long-standing, decades-long desire to like, what, we fucked up Iran once, and now like, what, you want to do it again? You want to topple another?
It's all we know how to do in the Middle East.
If it wasn't for that, I would just be like, this is entirely Israel's fault. You know, and it still kind of is.
Look, okay, we have completed our very successful attack on the three nuclear sites in Iran, including Ferdo, Natanz, and Esfahan.
I really want to hear him say those names.
Yeah, I don't know.
Esfahan! The SVU!
Oh my god.
These are huge attacks!
All planes are now outside of Iran airspace. A full payload of bombs, all capital letters, was dropped on the primary site.
Bombs! Ferdo.
All planes are safely on their way home. Congratulations to our great American warriors. There is not another military in the world that could have done this. All caps. Now is the time for peace. Thank
After
you for
we
your
bombed
attention
you?
To this. Thank you for your attention to this matter. He probably feels so hard saying that, doesn't he? Like, oh, thank you for your attention in this matter. Or do you think that was like somebody dictated that and they left that at the end of the email and the person just accidentally posted it to his socials?
I don't know, man. I think he's an old gibbering coot. I don't even know who. I don't think I can blame him for this. I don't think he knows. He probably doesn't even realize what the fuck he is.
Oh, man. You want to hear something interesting, maybe? Not really.
Shoot.
But for its part, the U.S. intelligence community has said it believes Iran suspended its nuclear program in 2003, following the U.S. invasion of Iraq. Director of National Intelligence Tulsi Gabbard relayed that guidance as recently as March during an appearance before the Senate Intelligence Committee. But earlier this month, Trump contradicted Gabbard, telling reporters on his way back from the G7 summit in Canada, "I don't care what she said. I think they were very close to having it."
This is why I go like saying this is Israel's fault.
Yeah, like someone just put this idea in his head. This wasn't something that he actually thought at all, which is, it's something I think we need to notice more of in Trump, because it's very easy to think that he's like the evilest, most ridiculous man in history. So you think that any bad idea he has just must be inherent to his character or something. But I think it's a known fact, right, that he is just somebody that gets played up to, and he sucks up, and you suck up to him, and then you get your shit taken in.
Yeah, yeah. It's
and now that has gotten us into yet another Middle Eastern conflict. And
yeah, and remember when he ran as being the anti-war candidate, and then he does this.
They're hypocrites, and they don't care, and it's why they win. We've said it a billion times now.
I know.
Okay, folks, where to even start with this addendum? There were 12 days of fighting. The White House said, "Iran, we just want to attack the nuclear sites, but please don't attack us back." Trump acted unhinged and said the same. "Iran was 5 minutes from a nuclear weapon," stuff we've heard since the 90s. "World War III did not start. Things are still very much not good. Fatwas have been issued. Threats have been made. Ceasefires have been ignored. Laws have been broken. Dicks are out." I don't know, folks. I don't know. Well, that's really bad, and I don't really know where to go with that, because that's like, do we have good spots of news?
It is just bad news all around. There was a shooting of two Democratic lawmakers in Minnesota by a crazy person. Some middle-aged geezer who had like a big issue with abortion, and he just decided to assassinate people. That's great. Yeah, that's nice. It's disgusting. It's happening in the backdrop of the No Kings protests, along with the anti-ICE protests, and a whole bunch of protests. And there's too many cases of violence against the protesters, too many things of police brutality, journalists being shot, just all sorts of fucking insane stories going on. There's just too many of them to fucking name. The LAPD and the LA Sheriff's Department got caught in the crossfire of each other. So like that shows you the level of fucking bumbling Keystone Cop. They're just so excited to kick the shit out of people.
Yeah.
America, it's another summer in America. So obviously what we have to do is, you know, fill the air with tear gas and fire. Like that's just the American tradition now.
Yeah. It's where we're at. Everything's just sort of falling apart, and then we act like it's cool for the holidays.
Let's see
what else happened. ICE insists that Congress needs its permission to conduct oversight. So once again, just like all the federal institutions just arguing with each other at this point, saying, "You don't have any authority over me."
Yeah,
because we're in full breakdown mode. No, but there's tiny spots of good things, I guess, right? Mahmoud Khalil is back. He was released after being unjustly detained for 104 days.
Yeah, it's nice. I'm glad that he's back with his family. I'm glad that, you know, he gets to hold his child in his arms. It's gross that it happened in the first place, but it's nice that every once in a while, because like this is a victory in that he gets to be there, but it's still this feeling of like, this should have never been a fucking issue in the first place. It just shows you the horrible state we're in.
Yeah.
Kilmar Garcia back in the U.S. And I don't think we touched on that in the last episode, but it already happened.
No, we did not.
He's basically going to trial. So it's sort of this situation of like, yes, this dude is being charged with certain crimes and things like that. But at the very least, he should get his day in court and not just get sent off to what is essentially a foreign like prison, like
concentration slight camp. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. There you go. But those are small things. You know, there is still this minor hope that perhaps certain amounts of the legal system, like, you know, certain judges can pump the brakes try to throw spanners in the machine of what is an encroaching, like, and I don't mean this in like a everybody panic, it's a fascist takeover, but everybody panic, it's a fascist takeover. That's what they want. You know, if everybody rolled over and let them do it, yeah, we would have a, it's only because the Trump administration is very incompetent and very loud, where most of the things they do, they have to announce like they're supervillains, that things are able to be fought against in the ways that they are. And on one hand, stuff like the judge, like all the judges doing rulings to try to jam everything up in the courts, it's like, that's good. A lot of it's failing. The same thing with the protests, where it's like, it's good that there are these many people that are willing to get out in the streets and rally. I think it's a very good thing. If you're not able to, you should look into ways that you can support resistance like this in other ways.
I don't know how much I truly believe in the protesting, because I don't know.
Without tangible goals and organization that would lead to something that could really stand against it, it feels a little hollow. It feels like the George Floyd protests, you know, where it's like this. It was good that there was this much attention on it, but at the end of the day, it was like, man, a lot of people got the shit kicked out of them, and the jump out boys put you in the back of a van,
and only we didn't for get them anything to then for give it. Them, yeah, only for the Democrats to give them more money.
More money. Yeah.
And that feels like what they'll do in this situation. They will use all of it to get the bad publicity on Trump, and then they will just continue to be like, well, we needed to do something about the border, so I guess this isn't how I would have done it, but you know, we would have been nice about it. I don't know.
It's the perfect example of like what, like all of this is going on. They're saying, oh man, Trump should not have sent the National Guard or the Marines and stuff like that. But at the same time, they're urging local police to help ICE with whatever they want. And it's just, it's
bridge over the river Kwai shit is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, we have bad news from other parts of the world too.
Cult related news too. Pakistan is currently taking steps to ban, quote, black magic, unquote. Now, here's my question, is like, looking at it, thank you to New York Times for putting their shit behind a paywall. You're a bunch of motherfuckers and I hate you. But what this seems to be an attempt at is to curb like fraudsters, hucksters, which for a certain amount of people, it's like that is all like you're thinking that is every magic person. You are all liars and hucksters. But supposedly there's going to be like a bill, like the bill is like you're going to have to like register as like a spooky woo-woo.
Yeah, because that's always great.
That's so weird. Like, but it's like if you want to give psychic readings, you got to be on like the approved list. It's like no, we're gonna do a test. All right, what number am I thinking of?
And this isn't a super uncommon thing, because like India has an anti-superstition law, Saudi Arabia has like some that involve, you know, like, you know, basically people being accused of sorcery and black magic, that sort of thing. And I mean, it's exactly what you think, though. It's going to be it's used, as far as we can tell, in the same way that any sort of like black magic law is used in a conservative religious environment. They just use it to be shit kickers. Shocking. And I get that, you know, in their minds, they're a lot of them, at least. I mean, I'm sure not everyone is just going like, oh, well, I think that, you know, the Quran or the Bible or the Torah forbid this shit, and then it's evil devilly shit, so I'm going to fucking jam these people up for life. I don't think it's necessarily just that. I'm sure some of these people really think that, oh well, this is all fucking hokum and bullshit and it's bad for society, but that's exactly what they're going to use it for. They're going to use it to see people that do shit that they don't understand, and they're going to call it black magic, and they're going to fucking kick the shit out of them, throw them in jail.
Yeah, it's not going to be there. I don't see this really going. Now, at the same time, like, I can see the argument of not wanting people to use their supposed nonsense to like defraud idiot, like, you know, defraud old ladies of their money, you know, that sort of thing. So it's like, I get it to a certain level. I think the US in certain areas has certain laws talking about that, where it's like, listen, you cannot claim to have psychic powers and tell someone where the hell buried treasure is, you know?
Oh yeah, there's a lot of laws about buried treasure and psychic buried powers or magic powers, apparently. Just like how in the various Solomonic Grimoire traditions, you see a lot more of, let me find treasure, let me find gold, than you would expect.
Yeah. But I suppose, like, on the same time, like, for example, if you say you interrupted a police investigation by saying, I've had a psychic vision, I can tell you where this missing person is or something like that, and then they don't find them. Like, you could totally see why you'd want, it's like, we should be able to charge you with something. All at the same time, you can make the argument.
The police, like, shouldn't listen to the psychics. Yeah,
the police should not be listening to you.
That is entirely, if that would be my legal defense too, is like, why would you listen to me? You're a police officer.
Another in more occult news, Western occult news. The filthy Guntherites of Beleskin, the stagnant Scottish water crusted Thelemites that are attempting to hoard all of Aleister Crowley's teachings under the guise of copyright infringement, have stepped in once again to prevent a reissuing of Magic Without Tears,
a book that
anybody with, 3 seconds on a keyboard can probably find a PDF of. What is the fucking point of this?
Because money. Because
money? What?
Yeah, like, because the Caliphate OTO ain't got no fucking money.
We didn't make money off of it, so
that's exactly what it is. They don't want anyone else to be making money off of this shit because they have nothing else to make money off of.
You could write your own books.
Well, you could even put out the books. Did you ever think of that? You could put them out yourselves.
But no.
Like you said you were going to.
No.
Almost a decade ago. Once again, people have put a lot of effort into an occult work that many, many people wanted to read, and now the fucking...
I think many people just wanted to own a physical copy of it, you know?
Well, and I mean, there was some editing and like an introduction, I think, by Alan Chapman.
Wow.
Like, you know, there people put a lot of effort into this, making something that was, they wanted to be good. And I have no clue if it was good or not. But the point is, I'll never know because the fucking shit kickers over at the fucking Caliphate OTO doing the exact same shit that they've always been doing and just being money grubbing fucking morons. I mean, I don't care what reason they use. That's what possible reason could they have for it besides money? Like protecting the legacy of Crowley by not publishing his books? I don't get it. I really don't get it.
We have to ensure Thelema's survival into the future by making the group smaller and smaller and finding more people to shove out and more ways of keeping the information out of people's hands. I think if they could go through and delete all of the PDFs off of the internet, they fucking would.
If they had their way, they would like hit everyone with the Men in Black fucking mind eraser flash thing.
The neuralizer?
Yeah, the neuralizer. And they'd say, now I don't remember who that bald guy that kind of looked like Uncle Fester was. And heck, you don't even either. What day is it? Ah, you're going to get really, really into the Golden Dawn stuff. You love David Griffin. All right.
Yeah. So there you go. That's all I just piss and vinegar for these people. They suck.
Yeah, they suck.
Y'all gave the landlord special to that fucking house. I'll tell you that much. I've seen the photos.
Preserving our heritage. The Loch Ness Monster just out there going, give me back my house,
bald bitch. You bald ass bitch, give me back my house.
If you guys don't know about our feelings on the Beleskin project, go back to the Crybaby Thelema Hour episode, I think. Or maybe there's even an earlier episode. I think
or
we talked about it.
Or just hear us talk about giving Beleskin back to Nessie.
Yeah.
I mean, that pretty much sums up my feelings.
Yeah, pretty much. Okay. Wow. So, overwhelmingly bad news from pretty much
downers all the fuck around, man.
Hey, I got an idea though. I'm gonna pull up a random fucking headline and see if anything's good. Dude, eeny meeny miny. Pilot who died in North Carolina plane crash tried to avoid a turtle on airport runway.
Bro, that's so sad.
That is the saddest thing I've ever heard in my life. The pilot of a small plane.
You die trying to be a fucking hero, man. That's how I'm going to go out. It's like, there's a possum in the road or something. And my dumbass is going to veer off because you know what? They're, God's critters.
They died and another passenger died. And then a second passenger was severely injured.
That's so sad.
Well, it's one of those things, right? Where you try to avoid a turtle and you're like, that's a good thing. Maybe.
Yeah. Well, I need like a good, I need a funny headline. I need something.
You need a parrot earpiece headline. You remember those? You remember those, bud?
I really do. I need a parrot earpiece headline, man.
Photos of top surfing dogs catches waves at Huntington Beach. No? There's not any really news. It's just a photo, really.
It's just like a surfing dog is pretty cool.
Yeah. How about 15 sets of twins are graduating from one New York high school?
What?
Yeah, 15 sets of them.
Are they Yorubas? What's going on?
It's a tight-knit group, they say. Some of the students at Long Island's Plainsview Old Bethpage John F. Kennedy High School. Do you have enough names on that high school? Holy shit. Have known each other since kindergarten. Their parents meeting through a local twins club. Oh my God. Could you imagine if your parents were part of the local twins club? And you had to hang out with nothing else but twins? That'd be so fucking strange. They're twins, but not identical, which means they're the bad kind.
They're evil. The evil twins. Yeah. One of the all of them have one good twin and then one that's got a. Oh, man. I just forgot Brian Wilson died.
Oh, Brian Wilson did die.
More sad news.
RIP Brian Wilson. We love you.
Hold on. I'm going to search.
Czech family of three is accused of running a fake dental clinic.
You know, that's pretty good. Okay. They did what?
Guilty to charges, including running an illegal business, attempting bodily harm, stealing an illegal production and handling of narcotics, psychotropic substances, and poison. They face up to 8 years in prison. So wait a minute. What? They have like a bunch of stuff. They're like, all right, hang on. Here, inhale this DMT. I'm going to take out your wisdom teeth. What? The police say the 22-year-old son consulted the internet to do procedures, including extractions, while his 50-year-old mother, a nurse by profession, worked as his assistant and provided materials. The 44-year-old father made prosthetic devices. Oh my Lord. This is so deep. Like he just figured out how to do it on Google, and then he was like, Ma.
That's what they're doing right now anyway. Is there just like type into ChatGPT? How do I take out a molar?
How do I remove liver? Liver transplant. ChatGPT, give me step by step instructions.
You know, you got to take them where you get them, I guess. That's just don't have not a whole lot of funny ones. You know what?
Oh, hang on. There's one. This one is a sad story, but it'll be a lot funnier than anything else we got going. Leaders of Orgasmic Meditation, women's wellness company.
Oh, one taste, man, I forgot.
Forced labor trial.
Oh, wait. Yeah, we did need to talk about this one. Hold on. Okay. Yeah, we got to. That's okay. We can win. We can make this funny. We'll cut out all the other bullshit. We can make this funny.
A Brooklyn jury on Monday found Nicole Daydona.
Yeah.
It's like Dead One with the A and the E switched. Founder of One Taste Inc. and Rachel Chirwitz, the California-based company's former sales director, guilty after deliberating for less than 2 days following a 5-week trial. The two face up to 20 years in prison when sentenced later. The prosecutors had argued the two women ran a year-long scheme that groomed adherents, many of them victims of sexual trauma, to do their bidding. They said Dodone, 57, of New York, and Sherwitz, 44, of California, used economic, sexual, and psychological abuse, intimidation, and indoctrination to force One Taste members into sexual acts they found uncomfortable or repulsive, such as having sex with prospective investors or clients. The two told followers the questionable acts were necessary in order to obtain freedom and enlightenment and demonstrate their commitment to the organization's principles. Ah, this is where the transgressive goes wrong.
Yeah.
You're not, like, you won't reach enlightenment if you can't get over your sexual hangups. Now, fuck this guy. He's going to give us $4 million.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, it's always so many cults gravitate around sex because, like,
because we're all hung up on it.
Well, it's such a powerful, whether through the abject denial of it, you know, the puritanical sort of thing, or through the overindulgent and using, it's a powerful way to alter people's minds, you know?
No matter what you think about One Taste and what they were doing, they chose it. They knew what it was about. That's what Cherwitz lawyer said, apparently. The fact they are regretting the actions that they took when they were younger is not evidence of a crime.
So basically, like, nah, they did it, and then they were like, ah, man, why the fuck did I do that?
Oh, man.
Nah, I don't know. Listen to this, though. Dubious.
Dedone founded One Taste in San Francisco in 2004 as a sort of self-help commune that viewed female orgasms as key to sexual and psychological wellness and interpersonal connection.
Kenneth Grant?
A centerpiece was orgasmic meditation, or OM, which was carried out by men manually stimulating women in a group setting. This just sounds like having sex with people.
Manually stimulating, it means that, like, he had like a
one of those Hitachi marriage ruiners.
Yeah, a buzzy buzz. No, maybe manual really meant like by hand, and he was like, all right, hold on, ladies. He gets like one of the fucking oil cans. Like the, I was gonna say, he had one of those like Tin Man oil cans where he's like, sorry, love, I'm a tad rusty.
Oh my god. The Dedone sold her stake in the company, yada yada, no one cares. She got out of it. The company's current owners, who have rebranded it the Institute of OM Foundation, have said its work has been misconstrued and the charges against its former executives were unjustified. Oh, sounds like they're still into this shit. Awful.
It's like Scientology, where it's like, nah, we purged them. We purged all those bad folks that did the bad things.
Yeah. Ugh, Lord help. That's pretty funny. Not gonna lie. I mean, it's awful that what they did, but it's like, it's wild to think that in, you know, 20, I mean, I guess that was probably a couple years ago. This, you know, they said it started in 2004, but it's wild to think that, like, we're still at a point where somehow people with even with all the culty shit that we consume now, too, like, people are still just falling for, like, nah.
It's just oldie but a goodie type shit.
Right.
It's like, man, it just works all the time for whatever reason.
Why does this keep happening? If we were going to start a sexual cult, what would we do?
What would we do with the sex cult?
We'd be the cult of semen.
Yeah, semen. Yeah, it would be semen cult. I mean, really, we would just probably sell a bunch of jack-off crystals.
Yeah, just J.O. crystals for days.
Yeah. It's easy. You can sell them. Like, you can sell them and you don't have to do it. I don't have to manually stimulate anybody. I'm giving you a crystal. Like, and here's my sales pitch. It would literally be, look, you're going to do it anyway. Might as well keep the crystal. Might as well have a crystal with you. Like, it can't hurt. The semen cult can't hurt.
I feel like this is why we can't get into doing the cult thing, because we're not like pushy enough. We're just like, come on, just try it. We need to be more like, change your life. Please. You don't understand.
I mean, it might.
We're just like, God, just give it a shot. You don't know.
It might change your life. Maybe. Buy this t-shirt. Buy this jack-off crystal.
So now it's on to the culture piece for the week. Co-host, this was your idea, wasn't it?
It was a bad one. Following up on the satanic panic that we were beginning with when we talked about the Memphis rap sigils, I had this thought of like the black mass, right? It's something that a lot of us spooky woo-woos are familiar with in theory, in sort of conceptual domain. It's something that's talked about a lot in terms of like witchcraft and also in terms of like the spooky public perception of magic.
Yeah, it's definitely pop culture magic.
Yeah, but it's one of those things that when you delve into it, the black mass is almost hyperstition.
Oh yeah,
it's something. That, guys, I'm gonna let you in on something. There's no such thing as a black mass.
Well, I mean, there are things that are a black mass, but it starts as pure boogatosh bullion. It's fucking haberdashery. It's foobar. It's fake.
It's a haberdashery.
I think, what's haberdashery? Yeah, is that making hats?
Yeah, yeah. It's gobbledygook. It's Ooga Boogas in the dark. It's boogeyman shit.
It's Big Noba Daddy. Like, it's not real. This comes out of either a fear or a sense of acting out in reaction to the heavy Christian norms of the time.
And not only that, it also comes out of an attempt of accusatory what's the word? It comes out of an accusatory premise. It's the idea of there you would find these people. It's like, they were at the Black Mass. I saw her at the Witch's Sabbath. It's that sort of thing. It's the Black Mass was created as a concept to demonize outgroups. And it begins where it always begins, with the Gnostics. In apostolic times, they say, well, there's these desecration of the mass, where there are these groups of like these Gnostic whatever. It's generally, that's the divide. There's the apostolic and then there's the Gnostics. And it's like, oh, there's these people that are doing subversions or perversions of the mass, namely using sexual congress.
Ooh,
well, that's just Grant like, intensifies.
That's just like one of these things that we don't quite grasp, I think, often, is that when you hear about like the idea of like, oh, well, they were doing like sexual acts and stuff like that, we often tend to think of that like, oh yeah, because like anyone that would be doing these acts would be demonized. But it's when a lot of times it's the other way around. It's like, no, it's because they hate them and they're demonizing them. They're saying that they're having sex because everyone knows sex is
bad. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So it's that sort of thing. It's like, in the same way that later they start saying stuff like, oh, well, they're like killing babies or whatever.
Right.
This was like the worst thing that they could say. And like, there's even it mentions of taking the, and this is like really Kenneth Grant intensifies, taking the menstrual or the sexual fluids as the sacrament for some of these masses.
Haven't heard that anywhere before.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's never been a thing. Yeah, but so it's like, that is like, now these are the accusations. Did these acts actually happen?
That's no, a bit of a probably toss-up. Fucking not.
Probably not. You never know. So that's actually the beginning, is like this kind of shit of like pointing at the out-group and saying, oh man, they're doing this wrong. And the term Black Mass actually starts popping up in the medieval period?
But that's quite a breath. I can't remember the actual dates myself.
But the notable things is like this starts forming into these ideas of the Black Mass as an intentional perversion, as a contrarian act of the mass, an inversion of everything you hold as sacred. Namely, it would do things like, it would require an apostate priest, right? Where like you'd find someone who broke away from the church or failed out or got thrown away or something like that. It would talk about, oh, well, yeah, they're going to break into the church and steal the sacrament. And then they put it on top of like a naked lady as the altar and things like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they even allude to ideas like human sacrifice of like, you know, killing a baby or like, you know, things that are extreme. But it's notable that these don't begin ever, never, ever as a set of instructions on what you're supposed to do. Because one, if there were groups that were doing this, there were no way in hell they were going to write that shit down. Ever. It's like, I might as well burn myself. But what they do notably start in is in like witch hunter manuals.
Oh, really now?
I'm not, not even bullshitting. Here, let me, the Malleus Maleficarum. I'm probably not saying that right. But these are example of like, that was like literally witch hunter manuals. Like what to look for, how to know that you're surrounded by witches. And it's like, look to your left, look to your right. Both of these people are witches.
This is what they did last night.
But yeah, there would be all these supposed depictions and descriptions of these masses of these acts that were in defiance of the Lord. But in a funnier way, right? This will be the part that's kind of interesting, right? There were, in some instances, examples of these masses, these Black Masses, that were actually sort of lighthearted jabs. Like,
right, yeah, yeah.
There were parody masses. The Feast of Asses is one of these things, right?
And right. And the Drinkers Masses and things like that.
The Drinkers Mass, yeah. Where they would do these things that were like, these were sort of folk ceremonies. These were things that were done
sometimes with the knowledge of the priestly caste, sometimes with the consent of the church, sometimes. But these were held as sort of like, these were not holy ceremonies. These were playing around.
Times, yeah.
These were fun times. These were, in a way, these are like almost Discordian sort of things.
What
like,
they are the is way that they're transgressive.
Yeah,
this is
yeah.
about, you know, this is carnival type shit. These were festivals. These were things for people to enjoy and have fun with outside of the full sacredness of the mass itself is, you know, it's the transgressive aspects of things that we were talking about earlier.
And I think that they're like, when these were done in these controlled environments, they were enjoyable for people. And even to the point of like, that's why certain church members were probably on board, where it's like, well, hell, let's, you know, God's got to have a sense of humor, right? You know, let's get these out in a way that everybody can sort of have their fun and fuck around and have a laugh about it. And then we go back to doing what we're doing. But then the church actually begins over time cracking down on these things because they are viewed as like, they go from being sort of lighthearted to being viewed as sacrilegious. And they get, I think that those sort of acts become further fed into this narrative of the Black Mass, the idea that any sort of non-orthodoxy ritual that embodies the practices of the Eucharist and that sort of thing is viewed as satanic, as in like inherently of the devil. But here's the thing, we still do not have any formula, like any genuine idea. The only thing you know is this is like, imagine like the usual mass and then like make it evil and twisted in your head.
Right. It's like an aristocrat's version of the mass, right? It's like, oh, well, like the altar is like a naked lady. And then like the wafer is like a human ear. And then you drink baby's blood and you got to put it inside. You put the wafer in the lady's vagina and then you spit on it. And then you say a bunch of bad words.
You got to do an inverted cross with your left hand, because normally you do a regular cross with your right hand.
Yeah, and you got to stand on your head and drink a glass of water.
Yeah, exactly. And you do all of these, and that way the devil shows up.
I know in one particular version, it was said that you do this so you can kill someone, which feels like a lot of fucking work.
I don't know if it was like, if you knew 100% it was going to work. I mean, it's at least not nearly as traceable.
No, they're going to be like, who got the human ear bread and where's my daughter? You know, that sort of stuff. Oh, and she's going to be like, daddy, I wanted to be an actor. Sorry. I don't know where I'm going with this bit, but yeah, this is, there's no exact formula beyond, as you said, a sort of contrarian or satirical response to the mass itself.
Almost hysterical in that regard, of like the idea of like, it's just the worst thing you can think of.
There's a good bit of writing about this from various people. Mostly, as Coho said earlier, this sort of like, oh, look what these horrible people are doing type writings. You know, people like Marquis de Sade, you know, write like fucked up shit about.
That's the notable part, that as we get out of the Middle Ages into the area of like, you know,
the early 17, modern,
you
know, and so on,
16th, 17th, 18th, yeah, Marquis de Sade, that sort of thing. A lot of French people. So like, you know, we are getting into evil territory because we are getting to the French. No. But no, there are like, there's like the Enlightenment era starts kicking in. But it's like these French people, this is when the Black Mass begins taking on sort of the character that we think of it as, in a weird way, in that there are like, there's things of masses that are written with this intentional purpose of being like kind of a contrarian shit in an act of transgression against the dominating force of the church. You know, and it's like when I say, oh, you're just being a transgressive little contrarian shit, that makes it sound very dismissive. But this was at a time when like the church's authority was all but unquestionable. So this did represent, to a certain extent, like a very powerful act of transgression, a very powerful act of defiance to what was seen as God's power over the world, you know,
right, particularly, yeah.
you know, and that's aristocracy as they and intellectuals as they break from the church's domineering influence, they do like they start writing up their versions of this mass. Sometimes they're like what I'm trying to find the one that is actually celebrated as a mass to the God of reason, that sort of thing. The Marquis de Sade is the one where it's like, yeah, let me do the fucked up shit just for the sake of doing the most fucked up shit. But like, you'll see the engravings of like the entirety of the, like the altar setup, the furniture of it. It's just naked people, you know, it's like ladies bent over and you're putting the chalice on it. And the chalice is being offered up to like three other naked ladies. And there's like all the, like the altar boys are there and they're still nude. And there's the priest who's butt naked with an erection. And he's got like nothing but just like the priest cloth, like shawl over him.
Cause just being naked and horny was bad enough back then, man. You know, that shit don't even faze us anymore though. There's nothing.
This continues, like I said, into the 18th, 19th century of like these begin, they start, everybody starts coming up with different versions of this. There's no real set formula, but a couple things coalesce. There's the, like I said, the idea of like the stealing of the host from a church is one that comes up a lot at this point.
Naked woman on the altar.
Naked woman as on the altar or as the altar comes up a lot. But this notion of the satanic, but also sometimes the notion of satanic in the way that like Levian Satanism really looks at satanic, you know, satanic as in antinomianism, satanic as in like the man as God sort of thing. As we get into the late 19th, early 20th century, like the Black Mass gets mentioned in the Golden Bough. The Black Mass gets brought up in what are considered sort of mainstream spirituality and comparative religion sort of texts as almost taken for granted as like, no, this is definitely a thing, but there's no real origin. It's Laughing Man and Ghost in the Shell type stuff. It's like there's only copies.
Notice that we started with the Gnostics. We talked about the demonization of the body, and we talked about an odd sort of satire of the mass. These should ring bells in your Thelemites brains, because obviously the Gnostic mass is kind of, in the most odd of ways, the most genuine version of a black mass that you could come up with that is not contrarian in the least. Like, there is a sense, I guess, in which the Lama itself is supposed to be anti-Christian, but like, you know, nothing in the Gnostic mass is Crowley going, and that buddy Jesus, boy, we're done with him. Patui on Jesus. Hawk Tua.
Now right. He does like he says stuff like that in other places.
But right, no, right. But here. it's not within the Gnostic mass itself. But what the Gnostic mass does have is the preaching of a unholy, in the Christian terms, message, the use of the naked female body, overt sexual symbolism, if not outright, you know, people hanging with dicks out. The Gnostic mass is the sort of thing that if you give it to like this old medieval Christian and have him read it, he would be like, no, this is a black mass. This is fucking devil-y shit. But that also leads us into Anton LaVey, right? Anton LaVey, and I'm just going to read this quote off of Wikipedia. Fight me on it. The usual assumption is that the satanic ceremony or service is always called a black mass. A black mass is not the magical ceremony practiced by Satanists. The Satanists would only employ the use of a black mass as a form of psychodrama. Furthermore, a black mass does not necessarily imply that the performers of such are Satanist. A black mass is essentially a parody of the religious service of the Roman Catholic Church, but can be loosely applied to a satire on any religious ceremony. LaVey would then go on to write the black mass and use it as the central first kind of starting point in his satanic rituals.
Gotta love that. It's sort of, he's right, where it's like he's saying, no, the black mass is sort of this thing that came out of like a parody or a defiance, a subversion, but it's like, it's not really like a satanic thing. And then he's like, all right, I guess I got to actually write it. Cause people kept bothering him about it. They kept asking, like, well,
he might've just known it would sell, but you know, the satanic rituals is all full of like all of them are this sort of thing. Like his black mass, which he, you know, so intellectually calls Le Messie Noir, He calls it the original psychodrama, and there's like a big thing where he's like, the black mask is a valid satanic ceremony only if one feels the need to perform it. Historically, there is no ritual more closely linked with Satanism than the black mask. It has long been considered the principal elective of Satanists, who were assumed never to tire of trampling on crosses and of stealing unbaptized infants. If a Satanist had nothing else to do and was independently wealthy, newer and more blasphemous version of the Messe Noir would be invented in order to nourish his aged existence, the theory went. Though a titillating concept to many, it is without validity and devoid of logic, as the assumption of the Christians celebrate Good Friday every Wednesday afternoon. That's his whole point, is, you know, he's willing to be like, yeah, this isn't really a thing, but if you want to like do it, you can do it. And I wrote a really long, fancy one where there's a lot of speaking in Latin. There's a lot of thing. You got to get some like black crusty bread and you put it in the vagina and then you throw it on the ground, you know, all that good stuff. There's a lot of big speeches about the Prince of Darkness being ineffable. It's no Gnostic mass. I'm not going to lie to you, folks.
You have to at least give it to him that he was like he's very open about like the idea of like this does evolve out of a sort of hysterical Christian background. Like this is what nuts thought that Satanist was up to, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, and LaVey's a carny con man, but like he knows what he's talking about, at least in that regard. What he really means is that, you know, I know that like, I've called myself Satanism, and Satanism is historically like people that actually worship Satan that like are very few and far between. So like, yeah, I get it. A black mass is not really an important thing to most Satanists, because, you know, what I'm talking about with Satanism is a very specific kind of definition for me.
He at least has enough wherewithal that he knows what he's talking about, and, you know, he throws together something like, yeah, it's going to sell, but here you go.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, not
it's probably about the nicest thing I can say about the guy, because I think most of LaVeyan Satanism is kind of dumb.
Yeah, it's not. I don't have many positive things to say about Satanism, but at least
and
in
the
this
people
sense,
that took the ball and ran with it are fucking god awful.
Anton LaVey's ritual is about every bit of like harebrained, scared, Christian type of like playing up the stereotype that you could get.
Alan Moore has a very, I think, interesting insight about this, in that the black mass did represent a very transgressive act for the Christian. It was somebody who, when someone is so immersed in a Christian background, this could represent an incredibly powerful magical act. Maybe this wasn't particularly great in the idea that it did not lend itself well to a liberating mentality. What it did was kind of like, in that same way of like getting back at your daddy, it was like that kind of energy.
it's throwing the party at your dad's house when he's out of town.
Yeah. Is that people, there were these magicians that existed in a very powerful Christian background, a very strong Catholic church background, where this was all they knew. And it was sort of accepted as the only way. So all they had to do to go against it was to be kind of edgy shit lords, you know? Or sorry, to be kind of shitty edge lords.
Either one works.
Here, actually, I have a quote. Christopher Hyatt and S. Jason Black's Pacts with the Devil. Right?
Yay!
In practice, this entails the ritual desecration, deprogramming of cultural taboos. In Bengali Tantra, this takes the form of the rite of the five M's.
We're tying it back. I was going to try to do that. I'm glad Hyatt did it first.
In which the Tantrika partakes of five forbidden substances, like beef, wine, and drugs, and has sex with a woman, or sometimes a man, either not of his class or forbidden in some other way. In European magic, it takes the form of the Black Mass and the Witch's Sabbath. The parallels are obvious, and both traditions serve the same purpose in freeing up the psychic and emotional faculties of the magician.
Heck yeah.
So to a certain person, this could have been, even to a certain people, even the dirty Age of Enlightenment Frenchman, something like that, where it's like, all right, shit, I still had the fucking priest and the nuns beat this shit into me from when I was a tiny baby.
Oh, so yeah, that's even exactly what it is.
Even if I don't buy into it now on like conscious intellectual level, this ritual can in and of itself represent a transgressive act to try to break myself of this programming, of this stuff that I have immersed inside of me.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, and you mentioned it in passing earlier, but I'll explain it to the listeners. During the French Revolution, there was an attempt at de-Christianization of France, but there was the Cult of Reason was established as the first state-sponsored atheistic religion intending to replace the Catholic Church. And that's exactly what they were trying to do. It's like, well, all of this stuff has been programmed into us and into society and everything, so we need to replace it entirely.
Yeah, but the way they knew how to do that, and at least in some small way, required like the breaking down of what came before it.
Right. Yeah. They wanted to, like I said, they wanted to break entirely from all of these sorts of things. You know, the attempts at the black mass bring that lower down into a sort of a performative embodied area rather than the big social change. Right. But it's the same concept. It's this sort of way in which these thinkers who were intellectually many ways far beyond the sort of superstitious and paranoid Catholic mindset that would come up with the Black Mass, but it still resonated in a very powerful way because of what they were aiming at in the sense of what it represented to them, having grown up with not just the religion, but those myths, right?
Especially when you consider that the church kind of did in some way or another hold a pretty strong grip on education.
Oh,
anybody that was educated was by and large taught through at least some form of the church.
Right. Yes, very much so. Or, you know, something that was connected to it. It was an integral part of society and of the academic world, I should say.
So all of these snooty Frenchmen and with their enlightened thinking, you know, they got raised by they got reared up by theologians. It's notable that as late as March 29th, 2025, there was a black mass held at a Kansas State House. Kansas Steakhouse.
What I thought you said.
A black mass held at the Kansas State House, which led to the arrest of four people.
Oh, joy. Rapture.
The leader of a small group of self-described Satanists and three other people were arrested Friday following a scuffle at the Kansas State House, arising from the efforts by their leader to start a black mass. About 30 members of the Kansas City area Satanic Grotto rallied outside the state house for the separation of church and state. The group also protested what members called the state's favoritism towards Christianity in allowing events inside. Governor Laurel Kelly temporarily banned protests inside just for Friday, weeks after Stewart's groups scheduled an indoor ceremony. What we're seeing is that it's like, yeah, they were right. It's like you said, like, okay, you'll let this slide for Christianity, but when we want to do it, all of a sudden it's an issue.
Right, of course. What else? But what do you expect, though?
Yeah, they're hypocrites and they don't care. What was it? 30 members versus the hundreds of Christians that showed up to have a fucking tizzy about it. You know?
That's how it goes.
It does. Like I said, say it led to the arrest of four people during this.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, which is just fucking wild. But it goes to show that it does this, something invoking the name of the Black Mass still does. It brings about a great deal of hysteria for the Christians who are and you know, they're, I don't want to be just bag on like, oh, Christians bad, but Christians bad.
Right. I mean, it's just there's a lot of them and they're bad.
A lot of there's so many of them that like your batting average for shitty Christians is a lot higher. And you show up to protest and scream about things that you think are unfair because you're so used to being in a background where everything gravitates around you and your one particular beliefs or your one particular belief system, whatever. So there you go. It's like, it's still, the black mass in and of itself is still just like, it's an incendiary grenade you can throw into the middle of a theological discussion if you're ever in the mood. It's interesting to me because it is really an example of like, this did not exist until it made itself exist by repeating the story over and over again.
Yeah, pussed and boots again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Perhaps maybe you haven't deprogrammed yourself quite as well as you think you have. Maybe you should look into doing, like, all right, if you're coming from the West, you're coming from a Christian background, maybe it would behoove you to take a shot at a black mass, at something truly, truly just burn that bridge with God and Jesus, you know, like, you know, get done with, get gone.
Get over it.
Do something. There was,
I can't believe I'm saying this, and I mean this with a certain sense of lightheartedness, so no one jump on me later. But in today's society, there is a certain level in which going to becoming like a tradcath is a little more transgressive than being a Satanist. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't mean that in the sense that like it's a big radical punk act, but it's like it's one of those things that if you want to do something that society will look at you funny for doing, if you tell them you're a Satanist, you're going to get a lot of weird looks from a lot of dumb people. But you're going to get a lot of weirder looks from a certain class of people if you tell them, oh, yeah, I'm a Catholic now. You're like, fuck. Do you like Warhammer 2? Who am I dealing with?
Just that scene from Moral Oral where it's like, oh, it's like, I'm trying to save souls. I'm like, oh, don't worry about that, Sonny. And then it goes all wonky funhouse. And he's like, I'm a Catholic.
I would go the earlier historical route. Don't do a black mass that's just like all, ooh, the Dark Lord, please defile the body of the Christ child, the Nazarene, the false prophet who is enslaved man, and then you spit on it. Do something fun, you know, go do the Paw Patrol movie and do mass, like, you know what I mean? No, but seriously, do like get transgressive, but get fun with it. Do the mass where you do it in the Kermit voice the whole time. In nominee,
yay! Oh man, I think Discordianism might lend itself very well to that sort of like jokey ass mass. Like, I think that's the kind of levity maybe you want for it. And in a weird way, right? There's almost that non-conformity only reinforces the conformity of like attempting to go against it reinforces it as a norm. But perhaps breaking away and just laughing at it as being like ridiculous might be a bit more destructive and transgressive.
I mean, Nietzsche said that the sacred was anything in a society you weren't allowed to laugh at. So if you can laugh at it, you can break it of its sacred power, I guess. Mm. Put it like that, maybe. All right. So with that, we're going to go to the palate cleanser of the show, and we're going to ask,
how goes the work?
Well, how goes the work, co-host?
Well.
Well.
I don't know. Like, it's hard to define where I'm at right now. Like, we went to Babylon Rising. Mm-hmm. We did a talk. We met some cool people.
Mm-hmm.
We got sort of approached about helping to help with some other stuff that they have going on in that sort of magic-y festival sort of vibe. Fun stuff. We'll have a little bit more on that later. As far as magic, I don't know. I'm in the middle of moving house, and that's a hard one. So it's like I literally packed up all of my magic stuff. I put it in my big goofy steamer trunk, and I carried it over. You know, so it's like I think it'll be nice because it's been a very long time since I've had a dedicated area for my magic stuff where I could like close a door. Or like an area where I didn't have to push the couches out of the way or something like that. Like, this is somewhere I'm now going to have the luxury of, like, I can stand up, walk across the floor, open a door, close it, walk the dinosaur. And then like, you know, my magic shit's going on. You know, it's like, hey, this space is literally just so I can do goofy magic shit. Yeah. How cool is that?
Yeah, it's great.
So I'm looking forward to that. And, you know, hopefully nuclear war doesn't break out and ruin it before I get at least a chance to do a little bit of cool stuff.
Yeah, that'd be preferable.
Because, guys, I have bad news. I don't know if you know, but we just bombed Iran.
I think if this goes out, then the situation will probably have not resulted in nuclear war. Because if not, this episode definitely ain't going out, because I'm not going to waste my time putting out nuclear war episodes. We're going to go to Twitch and live stream
all
that
our
shit.
Look, all of our listeners deserve at least one giggle gorf before the apocalypse, okay?
Maybe.
Just one funny haha.
Right. I think you're right. I think they do. Tiny cat has jumped to my keyboard. I guess that'll go into my work. I got a tiny cat, y'all. I have a tiny cat. She's super tiny. The tiniest cat. It was a solstice, and I had just gotten to work. I'd been there an hour early that day to take care of some things. And as I'm sitting at my computer dealing with some stuff, trying to wondering where my life went wrong, my beloved calls me, and she says, "Look at your phone." And I look at my phone, and she has sent me a photo of a tiny gray cat. And she said, "It was meowing outside of the apartment when I was trying to go to work. I couldn't leave it. So I put it in the bathroom and I gave it some food and some water." It's just this tiny, tiny, tiny little kitten that was out there. And they've been here for 2 days now. And I'm not normally one to like go off on my big metaphorical spiritual nonsense. But it, for better or worse, it felt like something. You know, like you had your moment with your cat that you were given a while back, if you listeners remember this.
Her name is Bast, and it is short for Bast Pro Shop. And she is the mascot for CMN. What are you talking about?
I don't think I ever agreed to that. But at any rate, I got this cat dropped on me right at a time where I was sitting here wondering about all the responsibilities I take on in this world and all the things that I do and whether it's worth it. How am I going to manage them and so on? And then on the day of solstice, I was given this tiny, tiny kitten that is like putting a damper on my life because I've had to sleep in my office like 2 days now to keep her away from my other cat, who is not happy about this situation. Now I have yet another thing that I have to be responsible for and I have to pay attention to. And I'm so grateful for the opportunity to do that. It's a good kind of message to receive when you have those times where you're wondering how you're going to do these things and why are you doing these things? Because the answer is always because somebody has to do them. We're all here to do something, apparently. So, yeah, that's my, I won't go into my work. My work is boring right now. It's a whole lot of doing this, my normal daily practices and waiting for a big, big burst of inspiration. And in between that, working on this book, working on the podcast, getting attacked by a small cat, and hopefully getting somewhere. So yeah, that's what I got. And with that,
this has been Chaos Magic News.
Oh gosh, the only podcast that almost got the ending deleted by a tiny cat jumping on a keyboard.
If you would like to hear more about how, guys, seriously, we just bombed Iran. What the fuck? What the fuck, guys? Panic! Everybody panic!
Calm down. And you can calm down over at chaosmagicnews.com, where we will have links to the pod, links to our amazing interview series. We're still cranking them out to this day. We just had an interview with the wonderful Mariana Pinzone. That's right. Captain Vavis returned to talk to us about their essay in the new book that's out now, the This Is Chaos. Peter Carroll put it together. It's got all these different essays about chaos magic, and hopefully we'll have more interviews with those people coming out pretty soon. And if that's not enough for you, you can go check out a spicy meme. You like memes, don't you, Sonny? You like to laugh? You can check out all those memes and all the other things we're doing over on social media. We're at Chaos Magic News on pretty much everything except for Blue Sky, where we're at CMN Pod.
And if we ever, ever figure out who the fuck got Chaos Magic News, just uppercut city.
I'm pretty sure that we took it and we just can't remember how we got into it. That's the only thing I can come up with. Who would take it from us? But if you did,
we're going to get you.
We're going to get you, son. And if you just thought, you know, I like these guys. I like what they say. I like that they have thoughts about the Iranian bomb situation and about, you know, whether or not we should hit turtles with planes. If you think that, maybe you would find it in your heart to do a little bit of a trade here. Maybe you give us $5 a month. $5 a month is a good number, right? But for $5 a month, you give us that and you get bonus content, maybe? Is that it? Bonus content? That's right. We got all sorts of bonus content. We have the occult iceberg that we're working on. We have our reaction videos that you can see. All of this is over at patreon.com/chaosmagicnews. That's right. For $5, you can support the objectively best occult podcast on the net. And not only that, but your name will get read in the episode. Where, you might ask? Right here, in fact. Thank you, Liz. Thank you, Local. Thank you, Cios93. Thank you, Pope Loki Seder XXIII LLC. Thank you, Obsplek. Thank you, Coco. Thank you, Alexander. Thank you, Acolyte One of the Ice Magic Meditation Society. Thank you, Curse T. Thank you, Fyodor Krasny. Thank you, Venus Christ. Thank you, Tent Athena. Thank you, Bearded Vegan. Thank you, Tremov. Thank you, Tangy Darling. Thank you, DD Destruction. Thank you, Toziel Obscurus. Thank you, Lavender Ghost. Thank you, Tommy Kelly. Thank you, Clodvis. Thank you, Cyrenix Flux. Thank you, Eric the Wizard. Thank you, Marcio Mendoza. Thank you, Archaic. Thank you, Michael Lamara. Thank you, Malleus. And welcome back, Double Deered and Aaron. We missed ya. Okay, I'm done doing the voice, but it means a lot that you guys support this. And it means a lot that even if you don't give us money over on Patreon, that you listen, that you tell folks about it, that you come join the Discord and talk to us and just have a good time with us. It's you guys are what makes us doing this worth it. So thank you so much for that.
You guys make the show feel worthwhile. You know, like we've said it before, we'd be putting this show out if nobody was listening, but to know that there are people who do support and enjoy what we do, it really means the world. I think that's about everything we got to say at this point, right?
Well, we have one more quick bit of housekeeping. Just to put it out there, I'm sure by the time this episode's going out, we're already going to have made a little announcement video where we're talking to people about it. But CMN will be at Carnival of Chaos.
Carnival of Chaos.
That's right. It's over in the same place that we were just at where BR happened. It's going to be up in Indiana. You know, you can check out. I'm sure by this point we'll have linked to the socials and all of the event stuff that you can go check that out on those various links by the time this video has come out. Go check out the other announcement video. We'll be talking to people and explaining why it's something that you should go to, not just for us, but for the occult world.
There aren't a whole lot of events that are actually chaos oriented. I won't say that this is exclusively about chaos, but it's definitely closer than some other events. And you know, if you wanna, you gotta be the change you wanna see in the world. So we're trying to put our meager weight behind it and do some fun stuff. And if you are at all able to attend the event, it would be really dope if you'd come out. You might meet us there.
Please come out and meet us and tell us all the things that you think. And we'll be forced to listen because we'll be like, well, they showed up. It'd be rude to argue. All right. So with that, Jason Crack, would you like the last word?
Distribute the Satanism to the inner cities. It's the only way.
All right, folks. Thanks for listening. We will see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Person was driving like a Jeep, right? And their fucking license plate is one of those vanity plates. And it says GLAD HRT. And I'm pretty sure it's because like their name is like Gladheart or something like that. But no, they put Glad HRT on it. And I think that's funny.
God fucking damn it.
What?
We just hit a ramp.
Did we?
Yep.